Dan, if do you have an understanding of what our concern is, first of all? I explained it to you briefly when I spoke with you.
Yeah, and from what I understand, it's more a jurisdictional issue as to, a candidate that's the lawyer, that's the challenger, it's not yet a judge, whether or not the Judicial Commission can discipline that judge or that candidate, I guess, whether the State Bar of Nevada can do that or whether the Secretary of State can do that. I'll tell you, my viewpoint is that, under the NRS, it states pretty clearly that if they're a judge, then the commission has exclusive jurisdiction. That's the words in the,
right,
the statute. So I don't think there's any question as to the incumbent. If they're on the bench already, then the commission would take over. For the lawyer that's challenging, I think it's pretty clear that the state bar has authority. And if you look at Rule 8.2B, essentially 8.2B in our rules takes in the Code of Judicial Conduct. And so, we can pull in our 8.2A has its limitations. There's a lot of, it has to be about the integrity of a judge. There's a lot of limitations, but if we use 8.2B, we can pull that in. We can pull in like rules 4.1, 4.2 of the Judicial Code of Conduct, and then that really broadens our scope. And so we can definitely use that to go after those candidates that are lawyers.
Yeah.
If it's a candidate that's not a lawyer, if you're talking about like a rural justice of the peace, I don't think we would have jurisdiction, obviously, because there's not a whole lot we could do there. But the in-between, so the lawyer that's a candidate that's running for a judicial position, we can certainly discipline, and we can go after them. And that under Rule 4.1 or 4.2, we have really broad authority, and we would be happy to do that. We just haven't had them. And since I've been here 4 years, I haven't had a single complaint in that area, but so I'm not too experienced on it, but we'd be happy to act. That's my understanding. And like I said, I don't have a whole lot of experience with it.
Yeah, and I think you're right, under 8.2A, that's still fairly broad. It's false representations. It does address the integrity of the sitting judge, adjudicatory officers. So I think there's plenty to work with, but what would it look like? And I think the reason you're not getting complaints is nobody else knew. They just assumed judicial discipline would handle these. And in the old days, we had that Election Practices Committee that disbanded. And so there was a mechanism there for a short period of time that addressed campaigns. But I think the lawyer candidates rest right with the state bar. But what would that look like in your opinion? What, you're in the middle of a campaign and you just see this terribly unethical behavior. What does it look like from your perspective? What do you do?
Well, I think that's part of the problem as well, just because our procedures are, the due process takes a lot of time. Typically, we will give them a chance to respond, so we'll send them a letter and say, hey, we saw this ad or we saw this comment. Can you explain yourself? Or we received this grievance from someone. And we'll give them a chance to respond. Usually, we'll tell them we want a response in 2 weeks, but it almost inevitably ends up being 2 months.
Yeah.
And then we have to set it up a screening. If we need to, we have to go into further investigation, interview witnesses, subpoena records, whatever we have to do. And then by the time we get to screening, usually it's about, I'd say probably 90 days is probably the quicker time. To 6 months, anywhere from 90 days to 6 months is usually how long it takes us to complete an investigation. And so if you're talking about an election season and they make this comment in October, we're just not going to be quick enough to move before November elections come up. You know? And so once we have a screen, then we have to file a complaint, and then it takes a couple months, probably, you know, 6 to 8 months for it to go to hearing, and then we send it up to the court. So, you know, extend it all the way out, you're looking at a contested matter is probably more like a year and a half. And so I think that the timeliness of it is going to be difficult. Most of these cases I foresee, like I said, I haven't had one yet, but I would foresee them happening after the election is over is when we finally get to it. Because by the time we send out the letter, we complete our investigation, we run it through the process, and the election's already going to be over.
Well, I think even with judicial discipline in these races, you're not going to get immediate action in any event. It's probably that same time frame. But there's the thump at the end that can be used to dissuade. Because if the judge wins the election, then there's still a consequence. And I think that's what we're looking for here, is that there's still a consequence to a lawyer that engages in this type of activity. I'm not sure if, I can't remember how that works, if it's leaked somehow that a candidate's under investigation for unethical practices.
Under our Rule 121, we can confirm that there is an open investigation and that we received a complaint, but that's about it. Other than that, we can't get details about the investigation.
Yeah, but I don't think the time frame is much different than it would be for a judicial candidate. But it's just the consequence needs to be there. But I think. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, Chief. Were you finished with your?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you and I share the same view. This is not an immediate solution, and nor, frankly, should it be viewed as one. I think the lawyer is going to seek, and they have a right to due process, for sure. But here's the deal. If it is serious enough, and it results in the lawyer's suspension, that lawyer is being, and they won the election, that lawyer is now a suspended a judge, which will have a whole new set of issues that will implicate the Judicial Discipline Commission at that point. To me, the having this method of reprimand and potential discipline would be significant, I think. It won't be seen that way in the short run. And the reason it hasn't been consequential is because nobody's done anything about it. Although I did read in the press, and obviously there's confusion out there, but there is a judicial race, I believe, in Clark County, or races, in which someone has lodged a complaint with the State Ethics Commission. I don't know if they have jurisdiction in any of this either, but I certainly think that the state bar has jurisdiction over the lawyer, and the Judicial Discipline Commission has authority over the judge. And if you're going to make false statements and they're serious, it should have consequences, and it will eventually. And that, to me, is the kind of thing that will eventually bring about maybe some improvement in the behavior in these judicial races where it's not taking place.
I agree. What about anybody else? Anybody want to weigh in on this while Dan's here?
Maybe just a quick question. So if the libelous challenger wins and becomes a judge, does the state bar lose jurisdiction at that point, and then the case has got to go to discipline anyway?
Possibly.
I'm just calling it libelous conduct. I don't know what else to call it. If that happens when he or she wasn't a judge, which would be a state bar jurisdiction, but then they get elected and are now a judge, does the state bar going to retain jurisdiction to hear the case?
Chief, if I could respond.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It wasn't election related, but during the 2020 elections, we had two candidates that were lawyers that had active investigations. And interestingly enough, in November, they both won. And so I called Paul and said, hey, you know, I'm going to turn these over to you. And he said, no, you're not. You're going to keep them. So we ended up taking them through the process. We get one of them ended up getting a caution, and the other one ended up getting a reprimand. But I had serious doubts about my jurisdiction, because that NRS does say exclusive jurisdiction. Once they were sworn in, you know, I said, all right, I'll take it. And we did. We handled it. And luckily, the one judge that received the caution, that's not really discipline anyway, but the one that received the reprimand never appealed it. So we're done with it. But I had serious questions about my jurisdiction there.
Yeah, my thought was, once they were elected, they're a judge, and that falls within the lap of judicial discipline. I don't know. That's a really interesting issue. Dennis?
Yes, I can tell you a couple of controversies that I've had in this area. The first was a few years ago, and the question came up about the opponents of a particular candidate filing complaints. And in this case, we're talking about a lawyer candidate filing complaints with the state bar, getting a number of people to file ethical complaints or grievances, and then as a campaign tactic saying, this candidate has 25 pending complaints against him with the state bar. And we had to deal with that as a campaign tactic. The people who filed or wanted to file the complaints just said, hey, we object to what this guy's doing. We're going to file these, and then we're going to publicize it right before the election. And that's a real problem if you open this up. Not to say that you can't file legitimate complaints, but I have seen it used as a campaign tactic, and it was difficult to deal with. Secondly, I also represented a judge, a district court judge who's now sitting, when we had the old campaign practices committee, and the campaign practices committee issued an order saying that the judge had violated one of the rules of judicial conduct. We went to federal court immediately, and Judge Hunt threw it out as being unconstitutional. And I mean, he didn't laugh it out of court. He said, this person's running for office, and that we're not going to have a truth committee sitting out there assessing the truth or falsity of statements made during a campaign. That was pretty clear under the First Amendment that was improper for anyone to do that. I just point these things out because there are problems with this that are sure to reoccur if we get back into this and start doing.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the reason the campaign practices committee, subcommittee, is banned.
Yeah, it is.
There's no question.
Yeah.
And again, though, I don't think there's a mechanism to get any type of immediate resolution. But I think, as I indicated earlier, the threat is what happens later, whether you're a sitting judge or a lawyer. Let it be vetted, and at least perhaps there's a consequence. But I'm not talking about an immediate fix, because I don't think there is one.
Yeah, the problem that you have there, though, is you've got the chilling effect with the candidate saying, I'm afraid to talk because of this threat against me. What had happened, I don't know. But this is not an easy issue, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. Anybody else have a comment? Okay, Dan. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
And, thanks for having me. We appreciate the information. Kim, thank you.
Thank you.
And just as hard as you, I don't know if you had an opportunity to talk with anybody over at the Secretary of State's office on non-lawyers.
Well, that's the question about whether the State Ethics Commission would be implicated. And I think there's likely a possibility that that would be the case for non-lawyer candidate for judicial office. But, and this sounds critical, I don't mean it to be critical, but as slow as the process might be in front of the state bar, affording the person appropriate due process, the process in front of the State Ethics Commission isn't going to go a whole lot faster or have a much bigger outcome or a much different outcome because whatever the Ethics Commission does is going to be subject to judicial review. So it could go along for a fair amount of time. The question I would have, and I was going to ask Dan a question before he made a clean getaway, is your jurisdictional issue is something that could be cured through Supreme Court rule, couldn't it? Where the Supreme Court rules are amended that allows continuing jurisdiction over someone even if their status changes to that of a judge?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
I mean, it would, let's suppose, for example, that someone running for office, a non-judge running for office, but a lawyer running for office, it doesn't arise in the campaign context, but they steal a bunch of money out of their trust account. And well into their judgeship, you all discipline them. You don't lose jurisdiction over that lawyer just because they became a judge, do you? And if you do, we should fix that. Because I don't think we want people serving as judges who committed crimes while they were lawyers.
Well, that was my debate, I guess, with Paul, because I read the NRS, which says exclusive jurisdiction once they're a judge. And so I was like, I don't know if I can't. I do have continuing jurisdiction. I think I lose it once they become a judge. And he was more in agreement with you, Justice Harsey, in that he said, if it happened, if the misconduct happened before they became judge, then that's your jurisdiction. So it just needs some clarity, I guess.
Well, if that is a rule issue, the Supreme Court ought to look at it, and this commission ought to comment about it. And if it's a statutory issue, I would think that it's something we ought to bring to the legislature's attention, because I think that's really bad policy to have someone who may have committed. I get Dennis's concern about First Amendment issues, and those are always a challenge. And, I'm sure Dominion voting machines is concerned about what is truth and what is false, and that will be litigated eventually. I'm a little surprised at a federal judge saying we're not going to litigate truth falsity when that's the elements of defamation. But all that said, I think what's important is, apart from a campaign controversy, a violation of the code of conduct, including a crime, would be something that I would hate to see us lose jurisdiction just because you became a judge.
Yeah, fair point.
So your jurisdiction concern is from a reading of the rule or a reading of the statute governing the licensure. I mean, the licensure of lawyers is within the control and their reprimand or discipline is within the control of the Supreme Court. So which one are you looking at, Dan?
I'm talking about NRS. It's 1.440.
Okay.
It says the commission has exclusive jurisdiction. It's those, that word exclusive, that's what throws me off.
Yeah. So you're looking at the statute that deals with the exclusive jurisdiction of the commission as divesting the state bar of its disciplinary jurisdiction over the lawyer.
Yeah. Right.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I think we ought to.
You've got concurrent jurisdiction. It's just like CLE requirements, isn't it?
Well, I can see his concern. Exclusive is exclusive, so exclusive as to what? And I can see the commission saying, well, how can we discipline somebody who stole money from a trust account or sexually abused children 2 years ago when they weren't even a candidate for judge, let alone a judge?
Yeah.
It's a potential loophole, so one we need to close, I think. So that's a statutory change.
Yeah. Like I said, we did end up issuing discipline to those two, and we weren't appealed, so it wasn't an issue of first impression for the court. But that word exclusive does scare me a little bit.
Hey, Mark, is that in the Constitution, the exclusivity language, or is that just in the statute? I don't have it in front of me, and I don't know if you're that familiar with it.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me either. I don't know.
We probably need.
I thought it was in the Constitution.
We better check it.
Yeah. All right. Anything more on this topic? Okay. Let's move to item five. This bill draft request that we've got sitting as a placeholder. I think it's under tab. The tab three of the materials. McCormick, John, are you still on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, can you explain what's going on with this? I think, didn't you say you submitted?
Oh, on the legislative thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that initial sort of one-sentence term limit bill draft as a placeholder. Because of the statutory requirements for when bills have to be pre-filed, we were unable to get significant enough language together to send that over to LCB because that deadline came and went. So we're going to just have to come up with whatever compromise language we have and want to change it to and then amend that during session. So the only thing will be if people have that sort of sticker shock when they see that the bill draft come out. But again, we're going to have to come up with that language and amend it in during session because the window of opportunity to change the language of the bill is gone.
Okay, and so why could we amend the language if we wanted to address exclusive jurisdiction, assuming it's not constitutional, judicial discipline on lawyer?
If we just want to make that one change, I might be able to do that with LCB now. If not, it will have to go into whatever sort of amendment we come up with during session.
And my impression is we aren't sure this is going to be approved by this committee anyway.
Right.
In which case, we just withdraw it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Then are there any other comments on this item? Okay, any other items we want to discuss? Does anybody have anything else that we haven't discussed? Okay, and here's what I'd like to happen the next meeting is I think I want to take action on all rules, everything that we've been discussing, so that we can get focused on putting a report together. Again, if we can get those resolved matters, Kevin, if you have a chance to look at Paul's latest response to what I thought was resolved, and give us a rundown on that. And then I'd like to see all those rules we've been discussing and proposed motions on those rules consistent with what the discussion has been. We'll go through and one by one take them and get a up or down vote on them as recommendations. Does that sound like a plan?
Yes, I'll read his reply to the response, and then I think I'll draft up what the we think, what I think, what the proposed bill change should be, and we can vote on up, up or down. I'll certainly consult with Judge Riggs and the other members of our committee, and I'll bring John. John's a voluntary John. You know, just having a look at the language. He's, you know, he's Mr. Statutory Language. Have him look at that too, so we're all clear on that, and have it ready before the next meeting.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other thoughts or recommendations going into this next meeting to where we can be productive and be in a position to get a report generated?
Not related to that, Chief, but this is McCormick, but I pulled Article 6, Section 21 of the Nevada Constitution, and there's no mention of exclusive jurisdiction in there.
Okay, good. Good, good, good.
Justice Hardesty, you're on mute.
That would be a reason to get a BDR from somebody on that statutory section, because clearly the statute would be a problem that we want to fix then.
If we convert our current BDR into that, it's probably
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I would suggest the BDR. I don't know how others on the commission meeting feel, but I think the BDR should be modified, should request a modification to that section, changing exclusivity to exclusive to concurrent, or that it doesn't involve, it involves judicial discipline or judicial conduct, but probably concurrent would be a solution. Probably need to run that by Dan to get his view as well as Paul, but I think that would be a good use of that BDR if others agree.
I agree.
In fact, I'll make a motion, Chief.
Okay, is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it. This is Dennis.
Okay, let's all in favor of the motion, signify by aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Are you opposed or aye? Anyone opposed to the motion? Signify by aye. Okay, it's passed. John, can you put something together and get it to Kevin, and we'll run it past the Judicial Discipline Commission as well.
Thanks, Dennis.
This is Judge Denton. I just wanted to point out, relative to what was just said about Article 6, Section 21, that also refers to the Supreme Court establishing the Code of Judicial Conduct. And when you take a look at the Code of Judicial Conduct, at the very beginning, it says application, and it says the application section establishes when the various rules apply to a judge or judicial candidate. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And that's what Dan was referring to.
That's a great point, though, Mark, because within Section 5, when you're a judicial candidate, you could adjust those rules. The Supreme Court could adjust those rules if it wanted to cover that loophole and allow for concurrent jurisdiction for the lawyer who's a candidate who's misbehaved. And allow, frankly, for the Judicial Discipline Commission to take action as a result of a lawyer who's been suspended. Have you guys had a case, Mark, where a lawyer was suspended because of their conduct as a lawyer who had become a judge? Have you ever seen that?
You know, I can't recall that. You know, I've been there a while. I just can't recall any specific instance of that.
Yeah. I didn't know if, like, No, not intended to disparage anybody, but in the Halverson matters, I don't know whether she was ever disciplined by the state bar. I think she was disciplined. She was disciplined by you all.
Yes, and I don't sit on any cases involving the judicial district court judges, so
yeah,
I wasn't involved in that one.
Yeah, right.
Interesting. Well, I think if we're going to change the rule that the statute would be seemingly inconsistent, we should change that too.
Yeah.
Or recommend it would be changed. So, John, if you could put something together, appreciate it. Okay. Anything else? Then we'll move to adjourn, and I'll send out a notice of the next meeting as soon as it seems practical. So we'll get that out. Okay. Thank you all.
Thanks, Chief.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Take care.